I am more effective when I speak to people and not rooms, concepts, thoughts, abstract ideas. I am more effective when I talk to you.
Welcome to the Facilitator's Guide. My name is Patrick Gallagher, your host. This is a two-part episode with my good friend, the incredible Brad Golson. In part two, Brad's going to teach us how to make an amazing fall bourbon cocktail. We'll also hear some of Brad's fundamentals for facilitating and Brad's guiding philosophy, talk to people, not rooms. So who is Brad Golson? Let me introduce you. I first met Brad at a conference only minutes before I was going to introduce him on stage. And in that moment, we both found out we live in DC and instantly connected. By profession, he's a consultant at Sensio Consulting Group. By passion, he's a SoulCycle instructor, Sweatbox DC coach, and Ironman athlete. Yes, Brad is exactly as intense as that sounds. Beyond that, he creates a number of different meaningful experiences through the other communities that he's a part of in DC, both his book and cocktail clubs. And since the moment that I met Brad, he's been a huge source of catalyzing energy, inspiration, and momentum with this podcast. And I owe much of the vision and goals and momentum in my life to conversations first inspired by Brad. So I'm incredibly excited to introduce you. We have two parts to this episode. So make sure once you're done listening to this one, tune in to part two. Enjoy this conversation with Brad Golson. All right, and we're back. So we're in transition now. We're gonna talk a little bit more about some of Brad's tools and tactics that he applies in his practice. But what we're going to be doing next is he's going to be introducing to us a little bit about his podcast and introducing us to an experience he wants to share with all of us. So Brad, take it away, boss.
Sure. I mean, you know, this is one of those things where I've thought about for a while of taking what I do day to like week to week and making it something that's accessible to others. And so one of the things is an outshoot of the group of nine people I get together with on a monthly basis to do book club and to discuss a book and challenge our minds is a cocktail club. And the thought behind the cocktail club, you know, as the consultant that I am now, is like, there's a consistent framework. It's taking something you're familiar with, starting there, meeting us where we are, and then taking us to a new place where we didn't think we could go. And that's kind of the framework that I created within this group of people I assembled who love cocktails, are willing to expand their mind, are willing to put in the work, and are interested in learning cocktails. And so, yeah, I was, as we were talking through, we're going to get together tonight, I was like, hey, let's find a fun new cocktail that I've never made before, you haven't made before, and let's just make it. And I think this is truly a test for the type of podcast, which is, hey, let's talk through, you're having a next cocktail party. Let's think through one idea that is new that you can try that's going to step your game up. If I can once a month learn one new cocktail, hey, that expands my repertoire and gives me a little bit more confidence. So I figured, why don't we do that?
Absolutely. The metaphor to this thing is so powerful because we were just talking about a couple things, like how you do something is how you do everything. And we're going to be literally trying out the doing something you're familiar with, pushing yourself, experimenting, and then having that be a new sort of, you know, joyful source in your life, or like a new, you know, source you draw upon. So this is truly, truly exciting. So what's the layout? What are we dealing with here?
Sure. So I'm a Louisiana boy. So of course I picked the whiskey based drink. And we are in September. And so peaches are kind of, it's not quite summer yet. It's so hot as hell. So like, I'm just going to go with peaches. and peaches, there were some fresh peaches at the grocery store. So I looked online for like a peach whiskey drink. And so we're going to just test this out and see how it goes.
Okay, perfect.
If this works for you. So what we have some bullet bourbon, which is one of my favorites. If I'm mixing bullet bourbon here, we have some simple syrup. And if you do enjoy a cocktail, I recently, through my cocktail club, bought this little cool glass container with the top that I just keep simple syrup in my refrigerator.
You make your own simple syrup, don't you?
I do, which everyone should because it's so easy. It's literally a cup of sugar and a cup of water. You boil it until you kind of don't see the sugar anymore and you have simple syrup. And then you boil it and then you just pour in this glass container or put a top on it and you have a container of simple syrup that can really go into a lot of cocktails.
Another metaphor, doing something new like that can seem like such a big barrier because I can guarantee you there are probably people who like, I don't make my own simple syrup. But it's like, that's a pretty easy recipe. But it's like the action to do that is like, it right. seems overwhelming.
And again, the whole premise behind what I envision to be a podcast in the future, which is like taking things that are daunting and are barriers to our growth as individuals and mm-hmm. confidence as men or confidence as women or whatever, and saying, it's not that hard. Like literally take 4 minutes and boil a cup of sugar and a cup of water, turn the heat off, and you've got simple syrup. Pour it in a little glass. And for those listening, like this is a glass container of simple syrup. But anyway, so we've got whiskey, we've got simple syrup, I've got some lemon juice here, I've got a peach, a fresh peach, and I've got some thyme that I bought at the grocery store. So nothing crazy. If you have a jigger or like a shot glass, I'm going to make you do it. Why don't I make you do
it? Oh, okay.
I'm going to make you uncomfortable for a second because you've never made this before. But I'm going to tell you to pour 2 shots of whiskey.
2 shots?
There you go.
I hope the audio.
And then you're pouring it in a mixer, which already has a cube of ice in it, because we want to get cold.
Okay.
Oh, what Patrick doesn't realize is he has now put 4 shots into the. All right.
Oh man.
Game on.
Is that really how that works?
Glad it's a Wednesday. Okay. Let's do this. All right. So whatever we did there, we are going to take the 2 shots of whiskey, and we're going to do half of that. So just 1 shot of simple syrup.
Oh, okay.
Just go with it.
Yeah, if we did 4 shots, does that mean I have to do...
Just do one full thing. You're fine.
Okay.
It's a Wednesday night. There you go. Perfect. Great. You're going to do the same amount of lemon juice.
Okay.
So just squeeze that on in.
Do you make your own lemon juice too? Would you recommend that?
No, not at all. It's too easy just to buy the lemon juice, especially when you're...
Squeezing this is satisfying because you can. I'm getting like 6 inches of vertical porridge here.
There's so much opportunity for inappropriate jokes right there. I'm just gonna let you go with that. All right, there you go. Perfect.
All right,
and then you're gonna throw a few sprigs of thyme in there.
Okay, technically, what is a sprig? This is a like I've heard the word, but when I actually physically have to see, is it like a whole stalk or like?
Just throw a bunch of thyme in there. I don't care. How much thyme do you want?
Don't rip it up or anything?
No, just throw it in there on the stem and everything.
Okay. It has been tossed.
Because the thing about thyme is they're like small leaves. And when you sift it through the top of the shaker, potential like some leaves will come through. But taking it off the stalk is just going to increase the opportunity for the small leaves to come through. So if you can keep it on the stem, probably the best. And then I would say take a wedge or two of peach. So go ahead and cut the peach, just a little slice.
Dangerous giving me a knife. We've already had a couple glasses of wine.
I know. Well, we might have to cut to a commercial while we go to the emergency room. So peaches, you can't really... Why are you cutting more? Yeah,
Don't cut more.
Squeeze a little bit. Like peaches are not like oranges where you like squeeze the juice out, I've learned. But just squeeze it just to like... Because I don't... Just...
It kind of like...
Breaks it up a little bit.
Do I just like...
Just drop it.
Oh,
yeah.
Got it. Okay.
Just drop it. And then you're going to put the top on. There you go.
I've never shaken something like this before. Have you shaken a cocktail? No, not out of a cocktail shaker. This is a totally new experience.
Okay. So, bottom line, like, let's go back to the fundamentals, just like the presidential transition. Fundamentals. All you're doing is mixing a drink.
Okay.
Now, if there are people around, you need style points. Right? So grab the shaker at the base and then grab it on the top. The top more is about like a functional, keep the top on. Don't let it go all over your apartment. And then all you do, just raise it up, grab it at the bottom. Like, so I'm the palm, like the base of the shaker is hitting the palm of my hand. And then I have a hand on the top, mainly my index finger. And then my hand's just securing it. And then you just shake it hard. And so you're just really shaking. There you go. There you go.
My acoustics aren't as practiced as yours.
Yeah, that's fine.
There we go.
So as you shake it, you're going to notice how the shaker actually gets a little colder.
Yeah, it's really cold.
Right. Well, okay.
I feel like my style points, if you had to give me like a rating out of 1 out of 10, I'm probably like
put
a 4.
It over your shoulder a little bit like that. Are you left-handed? He had to think about whether he's left-handed. That's a problem.
Well, technically, so
so that looks more natural, like as I watch you. Yes. And then what makes you even better, like more convincing as a bartender, is if you can carry on conversation while you're shaking.
That's a lot harder than it sounds.
Yeah, it's like pat your stomach, like pat your head and whatever on your stomach. Yeah, that thing.
Ooh, that's cold.
Yeah. All right. So there you go. So you've now made this cocktail.
It's my first time.
You've shaken. You've used and shaken it. Now remove the top.
Okay.
Now the other thing.
Oh my gosh.
Right? There's pressure built up in there. So you take the top off.
Okay.
Now, mind you, when you shook it, in this drink in particular, that the peach may have gotten broken up, may have broken up a little bit. Therefore, the holes in the strainer.
It reminds me of the airplane like quote. It's like some items may have been like displaced or whatever it is. Like, I don't know.
Open your overhead cabin.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to open the overhead cabin a little bit. All right. Because we need to get the contents out.
Yes.
So get your whiskey, get your glass, which already has a whiskey ball in it. And mind you, you have to distribute this across two. So where I'm going to tell you is don't get aggressive. Like,
okay.
Pour like
elegantly.
Sure. But also don't pour your entire cocktail into one glass. So pour for about 4 or 5 seconds, then go to the other one just so you can distribute it. Now make sure you keep your finger on the lid so it doesn't fall off.
Ooh, that's an important pro tip.
Yeah.
I definitely was looking to let that fly.
So there you go. Yeah, let it get a little bit, and then go to the other one. There you go. Go to the other one. Now, mind you, there's ice in there. There's ice. There's peach. There are things that are keeping the liquid out. So even when it seems like your liquid is done, reset it. Like, turn it over back right side. Reset the liquid, and then pour again. Because I've learned through my cocktail club that there's always a little more in there, even when you don't think there is. Right?
Yeah. Like, so, I'm really surprised. Like, it was like each glass only got like a fingerful, and then I reset it. And then now we're just about
over halfway through the glass.
Yeah.
Right.
But like the color in this is awesome, because it's like, you do see the peach, and it almost like gives it like a pulpy thick orange juice kind of look, but also like almost like a smoothie. And then like the thyme, also is kind of cool, because it gives it like that, like a hint of herb. So it's like the herb makes it look more complex, but it's like, it's really, really simple to make.
Very simple. Well, there you go. You poured it. Cheers.
Thank you, Dad.
Cheers to you. Let's see how it tastes.
It's a little strong.
Well, we all know how your whiskey pour went.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, stop following the directions. Direction one.
Well, so there you go. So literally that took 3 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And you learned a seasonal drink with, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 ingredients. I mean, you can make and is very seasonal, and you can say, and I think this is a drink that's light enough. It's not whiskey heavy, that people who aren't into like heavy whiskey or heavy drinks would actually enjoy this. And so you can serve this as a very early pre-drink, mid-afternoon. You can serve it as a dessert drink. But yeah, I mean, say peaches are in season and everyone loves a good peach.
Yeah, like I've been grabbing a bunch of peaches from the farmer's market.
So now it's like you have people over and you know it's peach season, and others have gone to the grocery store too. Now you can make that connection for them. And with confidence, you can say, I saw some fresh peaches, so I got inspired and I made this cocktail. How much does that give you confidence to hear that you can say that to a guest?
Yeah. And like, I think also too, like what I'm thinking about is like, it sort of ignites creativity and interest in other things in the same vein. So like going back to like taking something you're familiar with, being able to push yourself a little bit to create something new and different or like a whole new experience. I'm like thinking like, oh man, like if I wanted to make like a vodka drink, I could crush up strawberries in a very similar way, mix like, you know, a little bit of lime juice in a very similar fashion. And you get like this, like a whole different thing. But I was like, oh, same sort of ingredient premise. So it's like, it's already opening up like all those other creative outlets for doing the same kind of thing.
Totally. I mean, I think that's what happens as whether you are thinking about it as a bartender or a manager, a speaker, a facilitator, is like, go with what you know, and then throw in and sprinkle in a little something new. And you never know what you're going to ignite in terms of creativity, in terms of your next step, in terms of other ideas that it's going to open you up to. For me, that's the whole premise of a lot of what I do athletically, professionally, socially, is go with what I know, but then sprinkle in a little things that I don't know.
Yeah.
And who knows what that's going to ignite or what doors that's going to open. And I think for the conversation we're having in terms of speaking facilitation, I think it's the same thing. If you're one that manages or you speak to groups or you facilitate small, large groups, go at it with the framework that you know, but take a few chances throughout every time you do it.
Cheers, Brad.
Cheers.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing this.
Well, thank you for sharing this drink with the double whiskey.
The double whiskey.
I'll take it. I'm going to sleep well tonight. And it's a Wednesday.
It is a Wednesday.
Yes.
Okay. Let's transition then. We've already shared a couple lessons. If you had to like zoom out, blank slate, and share what you think the most critical fundamentals are for somebody who's going up to speak or going up to facilitate, like what would you say are the fundamentals that you would share with people?
So I would say, one, know before you walk out what you want your headline to be. Like if they were to write an article about your speech, what would be the headline of your article?
Mm-hmm.
And let everything you say come back to that. Two, something we've talked about already is as you're delivering that message, be authentic, be real. Be down to earth. Talk about your successes. Talk about your failures. Tell stories. People love stories.
Know your headline. Be authentic.
Be authentic.
Share stories.
I had one more really good point. So good, I forgot it.
I hate that.
And then the last one would be what I've said before, which is even if it's like a huge room, talk to people. Don't talk to rooms.
That's so powerful. Talk to people. Don't talk to rooms. And I feel like I'm definitely like, since I'm new in the podcast game, I definitely violate that a lot. Cause I'm like to everybody listening in to this episode. And you're so right. Cause like whenever I listen to a podcast, like I'm the singular person on there. So it's like, hey, thank you for listening in. It's great to have you. And that like, I was like, oh, cool. Like I am listening into this intimate conversation with people that I probably have no business meeting ever in my life. And so
yeah.
Talk to people, don't talk to rooms.
Something that is so superficial, but I feel so powerful, is so powerful, is the practice of all of us. And this is me challenging you, Patrick, me, Brad, and everyone who listens to this podcast, is when we speak, speak with confidence. Speak in a way that every word that comes out of your mouth has value. Because I think when we facilitate or we're the spotlight's on us, stuff comes out of our mouth and we're just like, what the hell did I just say? And what does that mean? You know, when I was in Soul Cycle training, to several of us, they would stop us and we would say, pick it up. And the trainer, the master instructor would be like, stop, turn the lights on. Pick what up? Did I drop something? She's like, what do you want me to do? Like describe, like when you say pick it up, what do you want me to do? I want you to go faster. Say go faster. So instead of picking it up, say, I want to challenge you to go a little faster. And so that every word that comes out of my mouth has substance.
Mm.
And so I think that it is being very aware and present in our speaking such that every word that comes out of my mouth has value. And to me, that is drastically changed. And if you have nothing of value to say in this moment, shut up until something of value comes to front of mind. Because when we start to fill space with things that don't matter or are just fillers, people are lost and our credibility goes down. And so that would be something that I have learned of when you speak, speak with conviction and speak with substance.
I think that's a incredibly powerful, especially when people are commanding the attention of others, is that what you choose to share, their attention deserves value. One follow-up question to that idea of speak confidently and speak with substance. For people that maybe have substance to share, but maybe like struggle with sort of like the imposter syndrome of like, well, I don't know if what I have to share has value. Do you have anything you would offer for somebody like that to like claim confidence to be like, I have substance to share and I can and I should?
Shut up. Get out of your own head. Because I've definitely felt like that.
Yeah.
Like, who am I to say that? Everyone's had the same experience. Shut up. Just say what you're feeling. Because, you know, I have through my life looked to others who are successful, who are younger than me, who've excelled, who are on platforms and they speak, whatever. I'm just so much more comfortable in that, knowing that everything I say is authentic and real. And I realize that although what I might experience or feel might be common, I have been given, for whatever reason, a platform to say it.
Mm-hmm.
And that others can connect with it. I so try to stray away from being that speaker or facilitator or manager that talks in sound bites so that I can get quoted. Because I do think there was a point in my life that I definitely spoke in a way such that I had like mic drop moments where like they are going to quote that shit on Instagram. But I have found more impact and more gratification from when I just talk from the heart. And I found more quotable moments from when I just say what I'm feeling and stop trying to speak in sound bites.
I love that. If you're somebody who is struggling to share your opinion, what you're telling yourself is a lie, shut up, speak up, be authentic. It matters. Boom. I love
mic
it.
Drop it.
Mic drop. That was my mic drop moment. I'm speaking of mic drop moments.
As you should.
Now that
walk
I have a microphone.
Off the stage and you were the most expensive speaker they've ever had for what they got, because that was literally 10 seconds. Yeah.
So one question I've been dying to ask you, Brad, because you're somebody who's always, who has a lot of things going on.
Mm-hmm.
And you live everything that you do with like a really vigorous intensity. So with all these things going on, how do you prepare to lead an experience, whether it's managing your team at work or leading a SoulCycle class or doing something else? Like, what's your preparation process like?
You know, even though I both Myers-Briggs and self-proclaimed, I am an extrovert, moments by myself get me kind of in the right headspace to enter into an environment where I'm engaging with other people. Definitely, I'm a type A, like very structured. But I think it starts well before that engagement. It starts the night before. It starts the day before. For me, did I get a good workout in? Did I go to bed and turn off all phones, screens of all nature, and just lay in bed? And my ritual is lay in bed, put on instrumental music with a time setter and just fall asleep. Did I get a good night's rest the night before? The interesting transition, frankly, is for anyone who is experiencing like a full day of work or a morning of like intense meetings, and then you've got to go give a speech or go facilitate something, or in the course of a day you have all these meetings and then you've got to go facilitate this workshop in the afternoon. For me, it's all about feeling confident and prepared, whether this is professionally or personally. It's about control, really. Why are you facilitating this? Why did they hire me to do this? Why did they buy, sign up, pay for me to do this? And recentering myself on the why. I'm going to turn off my phone or put my phone in my bag and not look at it and refocus on who is in the room. what is the setup? And I'm going to be present in the moment, turning off everything that doesn't allow you to be in this moment with these people who in some cases paid to be with you.
Yeah.
So whether your audience is five people or whether your audience is 500 people, one of the greatest bits of advice I got from another SoulCycle instructor was, whether there are five people or 50 people in your class, you show up people who showed up for you.
Mm.
And so in your facilitation, in your speaking, in your classes you teach, you show up for the people who showed up for you, because especially in an environment where they opted in, they paid in, they gave up their time at their desk, whatever the case may be, to listen to you. And so you owe it to them to be present for them.
I mean, it takes so much of the pressure and the ego off of yourself, and that it's not about you, it's about them, it's about why you're there. And when you become really present to that, like the impact that that has.
We love to project like, this is about impacting people. But let's just be honest, there is some gratification we get from that impact.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we do it. You set yourself up for success when you show up for other people.
We'll be right back after taking a quick break. Okay, so now I want us to imagine you're at the end of your experience or your workshop or whatever it is that you're creating.
Mm-hmm.
How do you make sure that people are taking away something or learning something? Like, what's that closing look like, or the way that you reinforce those takeaways for people?
Two things. One, you state them bluntly. Bottom line, this is what I said. I think you just have to state it bluntly. So in my case, whether that's a conversation, frankly, I had a staff member the other day, I need you to clearly lay out what you want in terms of development. You want to move to the next level. I need you to clearly lay out what interests you have, where you want to go. I can't guess. I can tell you where I think you should develop, but this needs to be a two-way conversation. I need you to clearly state what you want me to get out of this. One. Two, I need you to make it very tactical and tangible. So it's not only your message of whatever it is, it is, this is something that you, when you walk out of this room, you can change about your behavior, about how you think, about what you decide or about what you do, that could steer you in a different direction. As speakers, as facilitators, at the end of the day, we're trying to create behavior change. I think I need to clearly state what it is I was trying to convey to you, and B, when you walk out of here, an indicator, because I'm a consultant and I deal with metrics, an indicator that I have been successful is that X, Y, and Z, or an indicator to yourself is that when you're successful, is that tomorrow when you wake up, X, Y, Z has changed.
Mm.
And I think, so being very direct with your message, and then B, giving very tactical direction of what that looks like. And as a facilitator, frankly, that is a question I ask more than any other question.
Yeah, I like struggle with panic now thinking about that. Like, oh man, have I included that?
But that's so true, is like when you're facilitating a workshop, because people love buzzwords and people love to talk and be very ambiguous. But it's sometimes, if you truly want change, you have to translate ambiguous to very tactical in reality. So if you're the one, Patrick, throwing out that ambiguous idea, I am going to challenge you. I'm going to meet you where you are with that ambiguous, crazy idea. And I'm going to challenge you with me, collective as a group, for us to walk through what does that actually look like?
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, that is how, when I facilitate or I speak or I coach, I give them very tactical actions or very tangible things that tomorrow, in a week, whenever they can say, my behavior or my actions or my thoughts are changed because I went to Brad's workshop.
Well, you're also speaking to like the common fallacy of like how people set goals, or like if they're leaving a talk and they're like, well, I feel inspired and tomorrow I'm going to be a better person. Well, it's like, well, what does that actually look like tactically? Like, how are you specifically going to do that? Because you're like, what you were sharing about earlier is that it's ultimately about behavior change. And at the end of something, if it's just like, well, I have this feeling, feelings are fleeting. You don't have the tactical, like, what are you doing differently specifically? Then it's like the so what isn't met. And I definitely struggle with like sometimes of like coming up with like pushing people to specifically be like, okay, this is what I'm doing. Because I'm more of like, we're all feeling great. Wasn't this fun? This is cool energy, right? Like, so I think that's so powerful, and something like that I'm taking away as a really powerful reminder.
I think there's a time and a place for inspiration, mm-hmm. and there's a time to feel, but there's also an expectation of that was just a feeling.
Yep.
And feelings come and go.
Okay, Brad, I only have a few more questions before we close, and how I thought would be appropriate to close off our time together is centering around appreciation and impact. So my last couple of questions are along those themes. Who are the speakers, the facilitators, or the experience creators that you admire, you look up to, or consider role models?
You.
Thank you.
Yeah. I don't really know if I have like some one speaker or set of speakers. I will say, in the context of what we're doing, some of the most impactful speakers, if you will, in the recent past, for me, especially over the past 10 months, have been podcasters. And I will classify them as a form of speaking, mm-hmm. and sharing a message.
Do you have a specific podcast episode or person in the last 10 months that you were like, this was something that resonated?
100%. So I listened to a podcast. It was Oprah's Conversations for the Soul. So very cliche, but
she rocks. She rocks. There's nothing cliche about that. She defines the category. So
fair. So Oprah's Conversation for the Soul was one I came across because I was in this space in my life where I was taking a risk and I needed some, frankly, validation, inspiration, and some validation that I had made an okay decision in my life to leave this career of 10 years that was doing very well and go on this new path. And so I came across this podcast that Oprah had done, and it wasn't really, it was a podcast, but it wasn't really an interview. It was just a recording of a speech by the author of the book, Eat, Pray, Love. And she said, and she told the story of her going like failing, but then writing this book that eventually took off. And then she was brought on the speaker circuit and she gave this speech of follow your passion, follow what you felt like you were called to do. And in the midst of her like speaking, she got a little pushback from a woman who said, I actually feel worse because I came to your speech. Because I'm not passionate about any one thing. I don't wake up and say my life is dedicated to that. And so the author of the book, Eat, Pray, Love, said in her podcast, I stepped back and really thought about the message I'm delivering. And she said, it became a message of some people wake up and they are passionate, but if you're not, it's okay. And it introduced this concept of a life of curiosity. If you're curious about something, it's less committal from like, if I say passion and I say curiosity, there's like two very different mantras and state of mind, I think, that are associated with that, right?
Yeah. I feel very differently when you say those different things.
Exactly. So I went into my experience when I quit my job and I pursued this like full-time fitness of like, this is my passion. And that podcast and hearing her say that her speech changed to a narrative of be okay with living a life of curiosity that allows you to go down paths that allow you to explore and experience yet still back out if it's not what you thought it'd be. And I think that truly defines what my past 10 months have been. And so to adopt this philosophy of a life of curiosity where I said, I tried it. It still fills my cup up. It still adds something into my glass, but it doesn't fill it up completely. It said, that gave me the freedom to say that was okay, but you tried it. And so let's figure out what else fills up your cup. And so that's kind of the mantra and the one podcast that I can say I obviously still quote and think about that has defined my past 10 months. But follow your curiosity. You never know where it's going to lead.
As you're sharing this, like the thing that comes to my mind is just like curiosity is freedom, and that you cultivating that, like, because a passion can be so committed and you can be so attached, like, I am passionate about this. And then all of a sudden, if you're not passionate about that, then like, what happens? Like, you lose that sense of fulfillment. But the curiosity is freedom. That's cool.
Yeah. It gives you, your words, it gives you a freedom.
Yeah.
As we sit here at my like bar top table in my apartment, you know, I moved in this apartment. And I have this wall behind me of this big wall where I made a commitment to myself that I was going to have this apartment ready to go for by the time my family came visit me last Thanksgiving. And I said, that's going to include a piece of artwork on this wall. And I looked and I couldn't find anything. I knew generally what I wanted, the colors I wanted, and I wasn't going to spend hundreds of dollars on a piece of artwork. And so I said, you know what? I'm going to paint my own painting.
I didn't know this was your own painting.
So I said,
what?
Yeah. So I've
been staring at this all night.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
So I said, I know what colors I want. I like have an obviously like very gray, light blue, neutral tones with like accent colors and throughout the apartment, like on the bar with the gray and with gold. But I said, I'm tired of looking for art. I know what I want. I'm just going to paint it. I've never painted in my life. And on a Friday, I went and bought, like I got off of work and I went to Michael's craft store and I bought this canvas and the 4 or 5 tubes of paint that I knew I wanted, which was like a light gray, a dark gray, a white, a gold, and a blue.
Yeah.
And I watched a shit ton of YouTube videos of like contemporary abstract art. And I painted this and it was one of those where I was like, at the end of the day, if I don't like it, I'm going to throw it away. Worst case scenario. But I'm going to allow myself to go down this like space of curiosity of like, can I paint a painting that I'm satisfied with? Can I do this? I don't know. This literally cost me like $40, $50 maybe, but has given me, because I'm so proud of the output of this and the validation I've gotten over the people of like, oh, where'd you get your painting? And I was like, I painted it. And they're like, are you kidding me? And I like point to me signing this right here that says my name and the date of it.
JP Golson.
That's it. And I said, no, I painted this. I'm allowed myself to go down this path of curiosity. This canvas was painted on 3 different times before we got to this final product.
Whoa.
So like I painted it and I went back to...
That's a metaphor for people. So like this person has probably been painted on 3 or 4 times before you met them.
You're just getting deep. I don't know. Like, I'm too many whiskeys in to get that deep. Include that in your podcast. Whoa. But like this has... Like I went through 3 different iterations.
Yeah.
And it was like I literally had to go back to Michael's twice to get more white paint to paint over this canvas. But then I got to this, but it was explore, go down that path of curiosity. And so I think that's truly a metaphor for how we live our lives, but also how we work of don't be afraid to live this life of curiosity.
Yeah. There's so many metaphors to dig into with everything you just shared about the experience of painting your own painting. Oh my God. We may have to have like a separate conversation, like a separate podcast conversation about deconstructing your experience with the painting and how that has been applied to your entire life. Well, as we close, Brad, is there anybody you want to give a shout out to and share appreciation for?
Oh, so many people, right? All right. In the context of this podcast, I'll say a few people. I mean, the past year has truly been a transformative year. I think about my development in terms of calendar years. You know, every even number year, I do an Ironman and I push myself physically to a new level. Every odd number years, I focus on my life, transformational things that need to happen.
It's a crazy balance.
So in the course of that, I will throw props to a few people that shaped my 2019. One is my girl, Adeline Heyman, in my book club, who was the marketing executive who quit her job to go just tour South America and ultimately realized her love of photography and created a business and challenged me to create a life that I wanted. If I have to be just totally honest in this podcast, we had a conversation at her house where she was just like, create the life you want, Brad. And that just has stuck with me. And so from this podcast, from what I'm doing in consulting, what I'm doing with SoulCycle, what I'm doing in all aspects of my life, it's like, create the life I want. We have one of them. So Adeline is one of them, I would say. Two, in 2019, someone who has like changed me. We talked about that this turning point, Marvin Foster calling me out on not being authentic in myself. That moment was more transformational than I realized. And saying, I saw for weeks who you are, and then I see you get in this different environment, you become something different. Why? We loved who you are. We hired you for who you are. Stop trying to be someone different because we didn't hire that person. And it was the first time that in a while that I've been like, oh, wait, people love me for who I am. You know? So that was truly transformational. To think about 19, those are two people who have come in, who have been a part of my life that have transformed the past year for me.
Brad, if anybody wants to get involved or follow your content or stay in touch with any of the things that you're up to, how do you recommend people to support you or to follow up or to stay in touch?
Yeah. JB Golson on Instagram is like the gram at the point. In terms of a podcast, who knows? My a friend and I are trying out a podcast called The Reformed Gentleman, which is a podcast that helps guys and girls, despite the name, kind of take their game to the next level, an adult. And as I like to say in jest, like adult with confidence. But it takes a lot of things that, frankly, you and I have talked about, Patrick, and says, like, here's how you can take what you're doing day to day and just step your game up a little bit so that you feel a little bit more confident about what you're doing. And so I need to put more work into that. But that's another thing, like in the short term, there's a few posts there that I hope to build out. But a lot of the stuff kind of day to day falls under my personal, which is JB Golson, Golson.
And I will say one of your most recent posts about you like revisiting the memory of you completing your first Ironman. Whoa.
Yeah.
So for you who's listening in and who's contemplated an Ironman, check out JB Golson and the moment, what that looked like to finish your first Ironman. Whoa.
Powerful.
I started running again because of that post. I was like, oh, you know, like I got to set my baseline fitness level.
I started running again because of that.
Great.
Kidding. Bad.
Okay. Last question for you.
Uh-oh.
Okay.
But we're done.
Is there a final story of an impactful moment that you'd like to share? Of a moment where you made an impact?
So I think anyone who is a speaker or a facilitator, whether you want to admit it or not, you come to this realization of like, you're good at what you do. There was a moment, I think this past summer, where I was a part of an event where I co-facilitated with someone who I've known. And we had an existing relationship. But when you facilitate with someone that knows you outside the context of facilitating or speaking, and they then, after that experience, turn to you and say, damn, you're good. Or, wow, I learned a lot. I think that just hits you at another level.
Yeah.
You know, when people who knew you on a personal or social level, separate of this career, that for me is different. And I had that experience this past summer where I was a part of a week-long event, and someone who I had known personally back from college was my co-facilitator. And he, at the end of it, was very kind in his evaluation of the experience with me as a co-facilitator, but also very complimentary in the style and what he picked up on. To have people who don't know you in that, it's almost like people who don't see you in a work environment, and all of a sudden they see you and they're like, damn, you're good. You know, it makes you feel good. What it gave me was a renewed sense of confidence that I didn't realize I needed. The world works in weird ways. Like, yeah. He expressed that with me, and I didn't realize how much I needed to hear that. Two, I say it almost made me feel bad to be anything less than authentic. And that was one that I didn't expect.
That's powerful. I mean, I now I'm just like sitting here and reflecting on our conversation. And just the journey and the arc that we went on, you know, starting with the impact and power of authenticity to the lesson that you're sharing now, which is the power of what you choose to share and its intended or unintended impact and what that has on other people. And it's just been, Brett, man, our conversations are always awesome. And so I just want to say thank you, man.
No. Thank you. Thank you. I, you know, as much as this is a you exploring this podcast, it is you provide a space for someone to express themselves. And sometimes people hearing themselves vocalize something awakens something in them, you know? And I think you provide that space. And so, thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode with Brad Golson. Be sure to find Brad on Instagram at jbgolson. And check out part two of our conversation, where Brad's going to teach us about how to make a delicious fall bourbon cocktail. And we'll dive deeper into the fundamental philosophies and tactics that Brad applies as a facilitator. Shoot me some feedback. Let me know what you think about this episode or in any of the other episodes of season one. You can find me, the emails in the show notes, and, you know, shoot me a social media message or whatever. Thanks again for listening in, and have a conscious day.